is 21-1156, Cox versus Dex Media. Counsel for appellant, if you would make your appearance and proceed, please.
Christopher Murray for appellant. May it please the court. First, I just wanted to respectfully acknowledge that the glasses I'm wearing this morning may be a little out of place for this setting and for a courtroom setting. I just wanted to note for the court that they're prescribed glasses following a recent procedure. They look a little unusual.
That's okay.
Thank you. This is one of those rare cases in which an arbitrator's award should be vacated under the Federal Arbitration Act and the manifest disregard of the law doctrine. There are at least two features of this arbitration award that are unusual. First, the arbitrator expressly stated in her award that she was not going to be explaining all of the evidence and analysis that supported her award. That was contrary to a provision in the party's arbitration agreement that provides that the arbitrator's award shall be in writing and shall reveal the essential findings and conclusions on which the award is based. Here, the arbitrator expressly stated in her award that her award, the majority of the evidence on which her findings and conclusions were based and the arbitration award are based are not specifically referenced herein, that the evidence cited in the arbitration award is illustrative of the totality of evidence introduced whose weight underlies the findings and conclusions, and that any reference to specific evidence is not to be construed as reflecting the arbitrator's conclusion that is the sole or even the most significant evidence supporting a finding or conclusion. And finally, she stated that the arbitration award summarily explains some, but not all, of the arbitrator's analysis. The arbitrator thus expressly stated...
Isn't that consistent, though, with the idea that she was expressing the essential portions of her analysis? She says it's some, but not all of my reasoning. Can't we infer from that she was just giving what was essential and not going to give an exhaustive recitation?
I think, Your Honor, that there are at least two features of the arbitration award that pose an obstacle to that conclusion. First is her statement that her award does not even necessarily state the most significant evidence. I think significant evidence would probably be considered essential evidence. Second, the district court found and agreed that, in fact, the arbitrator never explained in applying the McDonnell-Douglas burden shifting framework. The arbitrator never explained that she was making the leap of inference from a finding of pretext to a conclusion that there had been age discrimination. So although the district court's decision suggested that the district court found that the essential findings had been included within the arbitration award, the district court's own opinion then undermined that conclusion. And the district court stated that the arbitrator did not specifically state that she inferred from the prima facie case and evidence of pretext that age was the factor that made the difference in Dex's decision. That would probably be the essential finding.
Well, on page 79 of the record, didn't the arbitrator say that Ms. Cox left her employment because of unlawful age discrimination? I mean, how much more direct can you be that she's saying that ultimately, at the end of the day, age made the difference?
She doesn't explain how she got to that conclusion, Your Honor, in light of Ms. Cox's allegations that her demotion was allegedly caused either by age discrimination or by disability discrimination. The arbitrator
specifically found that the offered rationale was pretextual. Now, what more do you need than that fact?
Your Honor, I think if she was merely pursuing one theory of discrimination, in this case, an age discrimination theory on its own, then I think under the precedent, that would be a sufficient finding that she found pretext and that would at least allow her to infer the age discrimination was the true concealed reason. But here she also found that disability was not the true but concealed reason, and she never explained why she found one but not the other under this pretext.
I mean, doesn't that, I mean, once she found that disability was out, doesn't she necessarily make the pretext finding on the age claim?
She never explained why she found one and not the other, Your Honor, based solely on a finding of pretext. And I would suggest that a finding of pretext could not allow a fact finder merely then to have any, to choose whatever theory of discrimination they want and choose some and not others. Pretext does allow a fact finder to infer discrimination, but doesn't mandate it. And it also doesn't tell a fact finder which theory of discrimination to find.
Well, you're objecting to the fact that she did not give reasons why she decided in your favor on the discrimination area?
Well, Your Honor, I think what we're objecting to is that she did not.
If you win the point, why do you want additional information in there on why you won the point?
Right, Your Honor. So, the ultimate question here, obviously, this court's review is limited because this is an arbitration award. And the ultimate thing we're asking this court to review is the fact that the arbitrator didn't comply with the arbitration award or agreement. I'm sorry. The arbitration agreement.
Didn't what? I'm sorry.
Did not comply with the party's arbitration agreement, which required that she explain the essential findings. And of course, we're speculating as to what her rationale may have been, just as the district court had to do and just as the parties had to do, because she didn't explain.
Why I am troubled to try to understand why that's the case. I mean, if there were two theories of discrimination put forward, she knocked out one, she found a determination of pretext, and she found that the reason that Ms. Cox left was because of unlawful age discrimination. If she's applying the McDonnell-Douglas framework and she makes a finding as it relates to pretext, it naturally follows that the pretext that she found related to the age discrimination that she did find to exist. I mean, it wouldn't make sense otherwise. I mean, so my point would be essentials means exactly that, essentials. And so why is there any need to have anything more than that?
Your Honor, I think it's because she doesn't explain how she gets from a finding of pretext to a finding of age discrimination and knocking out the disability discrimination.
Well, going back to Judge Kelly's point, what difference does it make? I mean, you won on the disability discrimination. What difference does it make? She's saying there isn't a basis for it. So what difference does it make?
Ultimately, the difference is to the second feature of her arbitration award that makes it unusual, and that's that she expressly rejected Gross's but-for causation standard.
She rejected the sole cause. You're overstating Gross, and that's what she took issue with.
Your Honor, that is certainly the district court's theory to explain her rejection, and that's also Ms. Cox's theory to explain the rejection. But would respectfully note that, in fact, Dex's briefing and arguments in district court in the arbitration don't make an argument that she needed to prove a sole motivating factor. That's speculation that the district court engaged in, that in fact the arbitrator didn't mean what she said, and the fact that she was attempting to reject a mischaracterization of Gross. But there is no showing that Dex actually did mischaracterize Gross
aren't you arguing that age must be the exclusive reason? Isn't that your position, that Gross requires age to be the reason?
Not the exclusive reason, Your Honor, but it does need to be the but-for cause or a but-for reason.
And didn't the Supreme Court say in the Paroline case that every event has many actual causes?
It did, Your Honor. And ultimately, the question is, did her age, was it a factor that made a difference?
The arbitrator found it was. Specifically found it was.
And the arbitrator did not explain how she got to that, because Ms.
She listened to the evidence and got to that point.
But both, if Your Honor, if they had pursued a theory of perhaps something other than McDonnell-Douglas burden shifting theory, if they had argued there was direct evidence or even pretext plus direct evidence. But in fact, Ms. Cox and the district court all rejected the idea that she was pursuing anything other than simply the burden shifting McDonnell-Douglas approach. So the only thing that the arbitrator had was a finding of pretext, according to the arbitrator's decision in the district court. That's what she was the arbitrator then used to make the leap of inference to that it was something other than the proffered legitimate non-discriminatory reasons offered by Dex. And yet the arbitrator, first having stated that she was not going to necessarily state the most important evidence supporting her award, stating that she was not necessarily going to give her full analysis in the award, and stating that she was rejecting Gross without explaining why she was rejecting it.
Well, she said she rejected your statement of but for analysis. And let me ask this question. Just work with me for a second here. Let's just assume that language is enigmatic. We don't know what the court, what the arbitrator was doing with that. Doesn't ultimately the only thing that matters is that the arbitrator applied the right legal standard. In other words, even if there's some quirky passage in there that we can't make any sense of, if it is clear that the arbitrator understood the law by virtue of the substance of its analysis, isn't that all that matters? And on that point, she ultimately said that Ms. Cox left because of unlawful age discrimination. That bespeaks in itself, but for, doesn't it?
Oh, Your Honor, I think actually, I think what's important is that the arbitrator applied the arbitration agreement.
Well, that doesn't answer my question. My question is, isn't the substance of what she did, if the substance of the analysis indicates that she applied a but-for standard in rendering the award, the fact that there's some quirky language in there that we can't make sense of or which may be open to speculation, that doesn't change anything, right?
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully think that it does, because the arbitration award required her to explain her reasoning and to, in addition to applying the governing law, which I think is the second factor. And I think, Your Honor, yes, I agree with that. The second factor says that the agreement says she will apply the governing law. And I understand under this hypothetical, we're saying that, well, the court could find that she did apply the governing law. But the other aspect of the agreement is that she'll explain her essential reasoning, and she hasn't done that. And the parties under the arbitration precedent, the parties have a right to have their arbitration agreement applied as it's written. And that protects all of the parties, not merely just the employer, but also the employee. That an arbitrator, especially given the lenient standard of review, can essentially make his or her award unreviewable by doing what the arbitrator did here, saying, I'm not going to necessarily tell you what my most important reasoning is. And then giving a highly deferential standard of review, the court can speculate or infer that she actually, or he, applied the correct law.
Well, given the highly deferential standard of review, is there any case law that you would have that would be analogous to this situation that would suggest that we should, because what it seems to me at some level, we're required to parse language here to get where you want us to get. And I'm not sure that's contemplated under the deferential standard of review, even, and the word essential in your agreement.
And Your Honor, I would just note that I'm getting near the end of my time. I would request a leave to reserve some form of rebuttal, but I do want to answer the court's question, obviously. Your Honor, we have cited some authority in our brief, yes, in which cases awards have been vacated because of the arbitrator's failure to explain his or her reasoning where that was required by the agreement. I'll need for a moment to look in my brief.
That's fine. All right. And if you can hold now, if you would like to, and we'll go to your opponent.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Ariel DeFazio, and I am the counsel representing the appellee in this case, Mary Jane Cox. It appears to me from the panel's questioning that there's a great appreciation for the enforceability of this award, and frankly, all the points that Ms. Cox made in her briefing. So with that, I'll just provide a brief opening and then open myself to your questions.
Don't read too much into the questions, Ms. DeFazio. Don't take too much for granted. Go ahead.
Okay, of course. So January 30th of 2022 will mark 2 years since Ms. Cox won her arbitration here in Denver. Since then, Dex has appealed the award twice and has brought us here essentially to have three more judges review an award that was properly affirmed by the district court. This case should have stopped after Judge Connie Peterson made her award. The parties chose her as a fact finder. She sat through 3 days of evidence at a hearing, and the delay and expense that has resulted since then has been not only a hardship for Ms. Cox, but also is emblematic of the kinds of maneuvers that frustrate the purpose of arbitration. They ignore the extreme deference that's owed to an arbitrator and the finality of her award.
Well, arguably, the arbitrator here is testing that deference. I mean, some of that language is, I've never seen this language where she says that, well, I may not necessarily give you all that I got. And, you know, I this may just be illustrative or it may not. I mean, of course, I'm paraphrasing, but it just seemed to be this long statement of telling us that she may hide the ball from us. I mean, what purpose is served by that? And how can we be sure, given that statement, that in fact she is giving us the essentials consistent with what the agreement requires?
Certainly, Your Honor. I agree that it is an unusual, seemingly boilerplate paragraph that appears early on in her award. However, the district court looked to just the simple common definition for essential, since it's not defined in the arbitration agreement, and came up with the fact that they needed to be basic, indispensable, and necessary. So that means, just by virtue of that definition, that not every single exhaustive detail needs to be included in the award, just the items that touch upon Ms. Cox's age discrimination claim. So the arbitrator discusses that Ms. Cox made out a prima facie case, and then she goes into some detail about why the legitimate non-discriminatory reasons provided by Dex for her demotion were pretextual. And so that the district court found were the essential findings that were required in this award. So regardless of that, you know, somewhat bizarre language, she did get to the right legal standard and laid out the essential findings thereof.
Well, I mean, go ahead, Judge Holmes.
No, please go ahead, Judge Carson.
Well, I was just going to ask, I was just thumbing through the arbitrator's award again, and it's got 25 paragraphs of findings, and it seems to me that maybe the findings don't necessarily jive with the idea that she wasn't going to give a good factual or legal basis for her decision. It's sort of a softball for you, but I was just looking at it, and it struck me that they don't necessarily match the, I'm not going to tell you what I'm doing, but then she spent 25 paragraphs telling us what she was doing.
I agree, Your Honor. And frankly, that's what makes it appear to be a boilerplate paragraph, because she then goes on to provide a rather detailed assessment of the pretext evidence. So yes, I agree with that, certainly.
What do you do with that language where I mean, I understand your argument about that she was rejecting Dex's sole cause, essentially, analysis. But if you look at Dex's briefs to the arbitrator, they don't use the word sole cause. There's nowhere in there that they do that. And so, I mean, how can one infer that that's in fact what she was rejecting?
You're correct, Your Honor, that they did not use the term sole cause. However, what they did is repeat three times in three briefs to the arbitrator that Ms. Cox could only prevail if she showed that age was the but-for cause for her demotion and her constructive discharge. Now, that does accurately state Gross. However, it misses the really important nuance that this court added to the but-for causation requirement in Jones versus Oklahoma City Public Schools, which is that a plaintiff can prevail on an age discrimination case if they show that age is the factor that made a difference. And that's what essentially should have been cited to her. And the Dex may have cited Jones several times in their brief to the arbitrator, but not once did they cite Jones for the purpose of fleshing out the but-for causation requirement from Gross. And furthermore, from the context of the award, one can tell that, you know, the arbitrator did apply the correct law as described in Gross, as described in Jones. There's nothing else beyond the prima facie case and pretext evidence that's required. And that's in fact why in Jones, the district court's award of summary judgment was reversed by this circuit, because the district court had required an increased burden on that plaintiff when in fact that's not the law now under the ADEA in order to prevail on an age discrimination case.
What about the argument that even if there's a finding of pretext, it's not clear that that finding of pretext links to the arbitrator's ultimate determination that the reason that she left was because of unlawful age discrimination? In other words, the suggestion that you can find pretext, but there needs to be some ability to link that pretext up to the ground of discrimination that ends up being the basis for the award.
Sure. Certainly, Your Honor. I think the answer to that is it depends on the nature of the evidence. And here, the vast majority of the evidence that was introduced at the hearing pertained to age discrimination specifically. So, you know, among other things, there was new leadership that came in early 2014. There was a new CEO and chief revenue officer who essentially went on the road and talked to employees all around the country about how they had a new vision for the company, where they were going to be hiring young, digitally savvy people with lots of energy. So they were making blatantly ageist comments to the employees of the company. Ms. Cox testified to that along with three other witnesses. She was also not allowed to hire a person over the age of 40. She was told directly by a recruiter that she was not allowed to do so because that individual was over 40, and the recruiter had been given basically marching orders to only hire people in their 20s and 30s. Ms. Cox had consistently outperformed two younger sales directors in her region, and her supervisor at the time even told her in confidence if they ever did need to demote somebody, it would be one of these two women because they were, you know, performing poorly. There was also the fact that the criteria that were used to create the rankings according to which Ms. Cox was demoted and ultimately constructively discharged were suspect. The arbitrator found much of the data put into those rankings to be suspect. That included the fact that 25% of the rating was based on a subjective leadership assessment that was actually changed to Ms. Cox's detriment, and the comments in it were completely inconsistent with her performance. The 75% of quantitative data that went into that was lacking certain criteria that were normally used to rate sales directors, but were omitted and actually would have been terribly helpful to Ms. Cox. And then there's also, please.
Let me ask you for a moment. Let's assume for the moment that I cannot discern, or at least I think it would not be a productive exercise to discern what the arbitrator meant by this passage about rejecting Dex's but-for standard as being misleading and incorrect. Let's assume that I put that to aside. Isn't it enough for your purposes that the substance of the arbitration award itself indicates that the court applied the correct law in making that determination?
Yes, I do agree with that.
Any other questions from my colleagues?
I have no questions.
No, I'm fine.
Anything more, Mr. Paggio?
No, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Murray, you had 38 seconds. Could you round that to a minute for him, please? Great. Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, to the question the court asked before, at the conclusion of my initial time, I did want to respectfully direct the court to page 42 of our opening brief, where we cite the case Western Employers from the Ninth Circuit. In that case, the court did hold that the arbitrators had exceeded their authority in refusing to make findings of fact and conclusions of law in the face of the party's contract calling for such findings. So we respectfully draw the court's attention to that. I did want to also...
What was the difference? excuse me, what is the difference between a contract that says make findings and conclusions and a contract that says essential reasons?
Your Honor, I think here this contract does refer to essential. And at the same time, you do have the arbitrator stating that she's not necessarily providing the most important evidence in her view.
Well, so, she's not repeating all the evidence she heard, but the essential, what is the essential fact?
Your Honor, I think here the district court highlighted that best in its own opinion, where it said that the district court stated that the arbitrator never explained that she was finding age discrimination based on the finding or alleged finding of pretext. That would certainly seem to be the essential finding in this case, Your Honor. And as the district court noted, the arbitrator never explained that leap of inference. I see I'm at the conclusion of my time.
Thank you.
Any more questions, colleagues? All right. Thank you. The case is submitted. Thank you for your arguments.
Thank you.
Thank you.